Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. This podcast is, of course, free, but to ensure it continues, it does require your support. If you can support the show and its continued research, there are a number of tiers to choose from at patreon.com/ the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast. We have a Discord private discussion group and a monthly live chat, plus regular personal updates behind the scenes. With your support, I hope to dedicate more time to this research and producing fortnightly episodes. Alternatively, you can really help support by subscribing, rating, and sharing your favourite episodes with your friends. Thanks. Hello, I'm really delighted to be back with you. It was good to take a step back also, just to take a breath and sense where the next series would lead. And I'm so grateful to my curious crew on Patreon for assisting me in this regard. Through polls, messages, and our monthly live chat. I couldn't do any of this without your support, so thank you so much. A special shout out to Pamela, Katrina, Paolo and Maz. I'm massively grateful. Thank you, listeners, for all your wonderful messages of support and for sharing your own encounters with me. I really love receiving your emails, so please keep them coming. You can contact me via scarletofthefae.com. I'm very excited to share this encounter with you. The first of the series. As you may recognise when you hear the encounter for yourself, experiences of this kind are well documented throughout the world, and particularly the UK, which we'll talk more about in the chat at the end. Our guest holds a very open-minded approach to his encounter, and it was really interesting to chat with him. As always, the exact location is withheld in order to protect it. I hope you enjoy listening, and I'll catch you at the end for a quick chat.
Yes, so me and a friend, what makes experience interesting is that it was two people, not just me. I hadn't an experience in the past, similar experience of sorts, seeing something in the street, but it was only me, the person who was watching. So in this case, it was me and a friend, and we were that night. It was very late at night. It was like around 2 a.m. And it was, we were in a mountain and we had been walking and we stayed for a while inside a cave that's somewhere in that mountain. And next to that cave, there is a chapel. Mm-hmm. And right after staying at the cave, for a while, and then we walked up to the chapel, and then from the chapel there is a path that leads directly to the town, which is on the downside of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about, I don't know, funny stuff, common stuff. We were not like talking about nothing mysterious, nothing, you know, that you could relate to the experience that we were about to have. So, and it was also, it's important that, it was full moon night.
Okay.
So the light and there was some mist in the air. So, you could see very clearly because the light of the moon sort of diffuses all around and you can see very clearly around you, even though it was again 2 a.m. in the morning. And we were just walking down that path, which is surrounded by two stone walls, you know, from which limits the the plots of land are separated by those stone walls. So we were just walking down the path, and when we were about to approach the town properly, there is a road which separates that path from the town. A little bit before that, all of a sudden we heard like a growling sound, and it was terrifying to hear. The growling was so real, and of course our reaction was just to defend ourselves. My friend was had a stick in his hand. I couldn't react. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't make a sound or move. And we were both like that for a while. And all of a sudden we saw in front of us, a few meters from us, like two glaring eyes staring at us. And the figure of what I could imagine was like a huge wolf or sort of animal like that. The fact that it was, again, there was the moonlight and this mist made the visual very clear, you know? So the growling was, again, very, very aggressive. I thought that the beast was going to kill us.
Oh, gosh. Like, completely. Yeah.
And so that paralyzed us completely.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I didn't feel threatened in a way. Part of me knew that this thing was not like from this world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a firm believer in the other world. So I sort of felt that in the long run, you know? So this beast was staring at us, and then it made some moves towards the one side of the path, towards the other.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was like very quick moves towards the other side, like crossing the path. But then the beast appeared back in its place.
So
every time it moved to crossing the path, you know?
Yeah.
In front of us.
So it would reappear where it started.
Exactly. The impression was like that. So I thought afterward, it could be that the same bee, or that there were several of them in line.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impression that I had. So every time it crossed the path, it was very, very, very quickly at a very high speed.
High speed, yeah.
And the growling was constant. Yeah, the sound was constant. It didn't stop. And then that happened like around seven times, more or less. And then all of a sudden, like, the vision disappeared. And the interesting thing is that beyond the stone wall, of course, there is a lot of, you know, trees and bushes. And the interesting thing is that the beast disappeared beyond that stone wall, and we could see the bushes move towards the up. It run up to the mountain. It was running in one direction, in the same direction, and we could actually see with our eyes the bushes and the trees and everything like shaking from the speed of the this thing, you know. It was I can't even tell how many seconds that happened for, but or for how long that happened, but it was quite intense because it was the visual side of it, and the sound, the piercing sound, and then the movement of the bushes beyond the stone wall. I remember I stopped to see if there were any holes in the stone wall or any, you know, fractures or something through which an animal could have gone through. There was none, you know. So I thought, okay, this thing just went through the wall, and even though it was an ethereal thing, so to speak,
yeah,
it actually made the bushes move.
Yes.
You know, and it was me and my friend, and we could both see that. And none of us have had any drugs at all, any alcohol or anything that could have made us like more, you know, more prone to having these kind of experiences.
Sure. And it looked material to you itself. It looked
absolutely material. Yeah. The first thing was the growling. The growling was like very real. And then the vision of that thing, that beast, it was huge in front of us, like a few meters from us. It was not even that far.
Can you remember how big it was?
I would say a meter and 20. Or it was not like a meter and a half. More or less. It was big. It was big. It was big for a dog. It was not a dog. And there are no wild dogs or wolves on that area. So,
yeah.
Or big animals at all. Like it was something quite strange, but it was a big wolfy thing.
Sure. Was it looking right at you? Was it looking at one of you or both of you?
Both. We were in line. My friend was standing behind me with the with a stick,
a walking stick or something.
Yes, pointing towards him, because he had the impression that the thing was going to jump on it. And he practices martial arts.
Okay.
So the instinct was to pick the stick and do that movement to protect us, you know?
Yes. So, wow.
It was like yes. And
God, do you think it changed its, did it change its stance towards you when he brandished the stick at all, or didn't that make any difference? I mean, obviously it would have made you feel better to know you were defended, but do you think it provoked a response at all from the beast?
I think not. I had the impression that thinking afterwards, because besides that, I couldn't breathe properly until we reached our place in town. I couldn't breathe. I was like in shock.
But afterwards
I was thinking, and the interesting thing was that we were right in the limit between the mountain and the town.
Interesting.
So it was, you know, this liminal place.
And
that's one of the reasons that made me feel deep inside me that it was not a threat. You know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. it sounds like one part of you had like a terror response, so you're not able to move or breathe. But then there's this kind of knowing inside. So how did that play out for you? Where did the knowing come from, do you think?
Well, I do. I'm a practitioner of what many people call traditional craft or trad craft. But even though I have been a practitioner of this kind of spirituality, to call it something, I have always been very skeptic and very rational with my experiences. So I always say that what I do believe in, I have experienced before, and I have seen, and I have touched, and I have, you know, and this was the first time that something like that happened to me. So part of me was like very quickly setting these pieces together, like, okay, we are in this liminal place, and it wouldn't be weird for this phenomena to happen in this liminal place precisely. Of course, we were, me and my friend, we are both, of a similar mentality in that sense. We have shared those experiences together, and, we have a special connection with that mountain, which is, popularly known to be like a magical place, telluric place of sorts. That's the reason why this chapel is right there. And there are some caves right below the chapel. And there are lots of folklore stories about things that happened in that place. But it's a place that we have been visiting for so many years.
Right.
We never had such an experience. It's not like people talk about these magical side of it at all. Like, it's a very normal town, a very small town, and very normal people and non-believers on spirits or the other world or whatever, you know. But something came together that night that made this happen. Some reason. So in a way, that's why I say I felt like it was not a threat. In a way, it was like a blessing of sorts. You know, when I have this belief that when these kind of manifestations happen, they are sort of blessings, because after all, it's very uncommon when something like this happens. Crossing of worlds happen.
Yeah, and I guess even if something appears grotesque or terrifying, that's not necessarily maybe an intention. It just is. And we are perceiving something from another world that is just showing itself in its, in, well, let's say we could imagine that they may be able to shapeshift, but if it is showing itself in its true form at that moment for whatever reason, and we are not used to seeing that, someone might be struck with awe, someone might be struck with fear and terror, and, you know, even disgust, depending on what they're looking at and how they perceive it. And that's quite interesting in itself, I guess. So it's almost like you reacted with the knowledge that you have as a and the practice that you have. You were able to ground it in some way and perceive it for the kind of awesome being or manifestation that it was, and the experience, rather than the fear reaction, which of course was running at the same time. It'd be hard not to react when you've got a growling beast in front of you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So And being so skeptical about many things, the thing was that my friend was right behind me and he could see, feel, and he experienced exactly the same thing. And it was both of us watching. So it completely blew our minds. It's too materialistic, too physical, and it was very extreme in many ways, but it was like
a
blessing, like
a
place that you actually love, because it's the place that we have a very strong connection to.
Yeah, that is really beautiful, that aspect. Had you been up there before when it was a full moon, or was that your first time on a full moon?
No, we've spent lots of nights since we were very young around that place, with friends and by ourselves.
And
we were very used to walking at night in that place since we were very young.
Yeah.
So it's a very familiar place for us. So that makes it like all the more interesting. That, I mean, some people might think, okay, you were perhaps looking forward for something to happen because it's a new place where you are at and your senses are a bit like, you know, but no, we were walking down the path as if we were walking at our own house. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were talking about normal stuff. We were laughing about things and, you know, so it was not like we were affected by the ambience. In the middle of the night, there'd be no one in the streets or no one in the path or in the chapel or. So that makes it all the more interesting.
Can you tie it to anything that happened in your life then afterwards? Did anything shift at all for you after such an extraordinary experience? Sometimes that happens.
To be honest, I don't remember, to be honest. I can't even tell exactly the year where or the month when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I could do some research and see if I can make out the date, but I can't remember.
No,
but I'm sure. It meant something.
I'm just wondering if, did you continue to live in that place afterwards, or did you move away?
No, we always went there to visit some friends.
Okay.
We didn't actually live there. So we stayed for very short periods of time every time.
Yeah, so it didn't sort of mark, you know, the end of living there or anything like that. I was just wondering whether it was coming to bid farewell or...
No. We still go there and not this past year because... COVID thing, but we still go there and, yeah, it's a very special place for us.
I know you mentioned that there was a folklore related to that mountain. Is there any folklore that ties in with your experience at all?
I think so, in a way. This place is known because, as I said, it's like a very telluric place.
Mm.
It's a very magical place. It has lots of caves and stories about an old wise man that lived in some of the caves. And this man was a counselor to a very important king in our history, in the history of Spain. So it's like quite a character, you know? This man was a wise man, and he had an interest in the occult. And he created a fame out of this place because he went to live there and retire there to live like a hermit
mm-hmm.
in one of the caves. And it was said that this man had an occult library inside one of the caves.
Oh, wow.
So all this folklore surrounding this person developed in time.
And yeah.
Now it feels like there are treasures inside the caves, and that the place is very magical in ways. So some people talk about having seen dwarves and fairies and but nothing like black dogs.
No.
And like what we experience,
at no. least
that we know of.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know if anyone else had. There's something about an experience like that that makes you feel different afterwards. Did you yourself or your friend feel different in yourself?
Again, I think not so much, because we are used to, you know, in confronting this experience, we were as rational and
yeah.
You know, as we have always been with experiences that we've had in the past. And so I wouldn't feel like it changed me in a way, apart from the fact that the material side of it was like beyond our minds. Like, this couldn't have happened even if I,
Yeah. The shaking of the bushes and watching it. Go back up the mountain
It was too much. It was too much. But apart from that, for us, it's like it doesn't have any less meaning than other experiences that we've had in a less, shocking environment. So for us, it doesn't make any difference. And as I say, we've been friends since we were very young, and we've grown up together believing in these things,
So
it's a very natural part of us.
I think that's wonderful.
Again, it's not like we are people like are prone to having back from whatever small experience that we may have. Because I always imagine like people that didn't have the knowledge that I have at the moment experiencing the same thing. I could very easily imagine someone having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Seeing something like that. Folklore tells, even in north of Spain, especially in Galicia and Asturias, there is a black dog folklore there which mentions this kind of thing, you know, and connects the appearance of black dog with death and misfortune. I can very easily imagine how someone, common people, might feel after having such an experience.
Totally. Yeah, I can absolutely imagine that as well. I was just thinking also about the eyes, because, in black dog folklore, that's always one of the main things that people describe, aside from the size. Can you describe again what the eyes look like?
Yes, it was what I remember. It was like they were glowing, like in an orangey, orangey light. It was not fire as such, but it was a fiery color. But again, it's what I can remember now. It happened very fast. And now that I remember it, I'm not even sure if I was able to stare at the thing the whole time.
Okay.
Or if I closed my eyes, I can't even tell. The sight was there, the sound was there the whole time, and yes, the eyes were glowing,
And when it was growling, how close was that growl? Because I know you said the growl stayed constant, but it was running towards the path and then reappearing again and running around again. But the growl stayed close to you. So how is that how it was?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was a very typical, very wild kind of growling from any wolf.
Mm.
It's a very prototypical sound.
Yeah.
But it was very, very intense, very...
And the wall itself, how tall was the wall? So the wall goes, so it's like a pathway with a wall either side, right, that goes down the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the wall is about, I think our height. It's not like you can clearly see what's on the other side of the plot.
Mm.
Apart from the bushes that I say, like, you could see appearing, you know, it's not like you have a clear view of the plot.
Mm.
But, yeah, more or less it was, 1 meter and 70.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
1 meter and 80, more or less.
And when it was running away up the bushes, you could still see its physical form, or could you just see the bushes shaking with, could you actually see its physical form?
Not really. Not
no.
Really. The stone wall was cutting the side. But
yeah.
The interesting thing was that we followed with our view, with our eyes, the direction of the movement of the beast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We followed with our eyes, and it was in the exactly precise direction that we saw the bushes shake towards the mountain. So
yeah.
We were going down, and the beast was going up.
Yeah.
And it was exactly in the same direction and the same speed, which is very strange also, because no common animal from that area would move to such a speed, you know. It was very quick.
Yeah. Did you tell any of your family? Because I'm guessing they're quite familiar with that mountain, or did you keep it to yourselves?
We kept it to ourselves. We didn't feel like it was something that we should share with anyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Only with the years and after talking about it, we decided to talk and tell some people.
And yeah.
I also talked about it to Norman.
Oh, yes, Mark Norman. Yes, that's right.
Yes, Mark Norman, because...
Black Dog folklore researcher, and he's written
exactly.
A book on the subject, yeah.
So I remember I wrote him about it, and then, of course, talking with you, I think it's a very interesting thing to share. And
yes, it is.
It's common.
It's fabulous. I mean, there's a podcast I've been listening to, Howard Hughes, and he had an interview with, I can't remember the author, but it's a book was called Beasts of Britain. And there are quite a few accounts of Black Dog sightings and encounters in that podcast.
Yes, I think I have it.
It's really amazing, actually. And again, it's they're sightings that are witnessed by more than one person at a time. In fact, some of the sightings were seen by a whole host of people in different locations around the same area. But it turned out that it was seen by maybe something like five or six people, you know, in different places around the same area. This was somewhere in Northern England, from memory. But that was... I did find that really fascinating. So this is something that does occur fairly regularly. These are fairly well reported. Call them apparitions, call them otherworldly beings. But they are certainly very physical. And it is interesting how often they do come up.
Yes. And what makes it more interesting is that in here, in my case, is that these aren't things that people normally talk about in the countryside or in the mountain or in, you know, in our area at mm-hmm. all. In fact, our folklore about fairies and such is like a little bit of taboo here.
Right. So
people don't remember stories about these things or don't talk about it anymore. They are very Catholic, you know. So it is strange. People, some people think that because you live in a place or in a country where folklore is very much alive and such, that you are more easily, you know, open to having such encounters. But in my experience, it's like, it's not necessarily so. Like in our places, it's not like, this place is magical by itself, but not because the people in town tell this.
Like, yeah.
It has its legends and such, but people are not very sensitive at all about spiritual stuff or anything that hasn't got to do with the Virgin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, from the chapel. So apart from that, there is no mystique. There is nothing there that leads you to think that people believe in the other world or anything like that. That's why I felt like it would be interesting to share, because it's a very uncommon place or a very uncommon location or very uncommon kind of encounter.
I was just thinking, so the chapel on the top, did you say that's dedicated to Virgin Mary?
Yes, it's a Virgin, that it's called Virgin of the Angels, which is a beautiful imagery. To consider, because then, you know, the name, the caves that are in that place, which, as I said, are related to this very, to this man I talked to you about.
What era was he living in?
I would say the 18th century.
Okay.
So fairly recent. You know, it was, fairly recently. And in the cave where this man is said to have lived, he built like a stone seat where he would meditate. Okay. And there is a huge stone altar there, like a huge stone boat.
Sorry, did you say a vault or a boat?
A boat.
Wow, amazing.
It's a huge piece of altar there that I don't know if they have actually dated these piece of stone or whatever, but it's right in front of the cliff, because it's a cliff.
Gosh.
It's strange. It's a very strange place.
Yeah.
But as I said, like, people from the town, it's a very small town, and people are not very, you know, they are not believers into the other world, I would say.
Yes.
The folklore is still very traditional.
Well, I mean, there may well be older people in the community that know folklore that just wouldn't be prepared to talk about it. You just don't know, do you? Especially if, you know, they're very Catholic and would be reluctant to, you know, even discuss or think about anything like that, which you can understand.
I think I remember one story I heard once about a girl being saved by an angel after falling from the cliff. But again, it's related to the Virgin intercession there. So, that I actually.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the angels were there before. Maybe the angels were there before the religion. How old is the church? Do you know when the church was built there?
I'm not sure. I would say it should be from after the appearance of this man.
Yeah. That is interesting, because it's like, okay, if this place is a place where that energy is felt and there are angels and fairies and these black dog manifestations and any other beings from the other world, then, and it's known as the place of the angels, and of course this guy also feels attracted to being there, where the caves are, and whoever lived in those caves, there must have been, you know, communities that potentially use those caves at one time or another. So there's maybe layer upon layer of connection with the beings of this place. And of course, then at a certain point, Catholicism will have, you know, rebranded it. It is of the angels. If the people of that town called it their place of the angels, or it was known as such, then suddenly then it's rebranded Virgin of the Angels. It's able to be venerated, but under the Catholic faith, which allows the people there to continue venerating this mountain, but through the lens of Christianity, which is acceptable.
Yeah, the place is too magical for people to be so, you know, blind to, I mean, it's a whole, like, with the caves, with the cliffs, and with the chapel right on top of the cliff, and all these strange stories about this wise man coming from Madrid to that
amazing spot.
Like, he could have chosen any other place in Spain, but he chose that specific cave. Why? You know, it's a very interesting story, but
it's wonderful.
Also, Joe, I don't know if I mentioned that I had a previous experience before this one.
Yes, delighted if you would be happy to talk about that too.
Yeah, but that happened like many years before this experience in the mountain. And that was only me, the person who saw that. But I was talking on the phone with my partner. It was, again, very late at night. It was around, I think, around the same time, or even later, 3 a.m. So, and I was talking to my partner on the phone, and the phone was next to the window, and the blinds were halfway down. And so I could see part of the street, part of the road, and some cars were parked on the other side. So I was talking with my partner, and all of a sudden I caught sight of some huge thing again. I say huge because I could compare with the cars that were parked on the other side of the road. So tracing like circles, perfect circles at a very high speed. Like, I couldn't see the thing properly with details, but I could see the perfect circles that it was tracing and moving from my left to my right, or to the left, from the left of the window to the right of the window. And it was on the road, like it was tracing circles and going forward, but very, very, very quickly. But it was only me that was watching, and my partner was a bit scared because all of a sudden I stopped talking and I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And it happened very, very, very quickly. But that was many years previous to that experience. And it was right next to my house. You know, the atmosphere was not very, you know, very magical in any way, I would say. That happened. It was perfect circles. He was walking forward and drawing these circles.
Yeah, that is amazing. So, but did you say, was it walking or running then in circles? running. And it looked like, what kind of form did it take?
I couldn't actually see because it was so quick that, I mean, it happened in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But so I could only see like the shadow because I could see the sort of the shape and the shadow at the same time. And it, because it was night at night, I mean, the street lights were illuminating the road and such. So I could see clearly.
So it's an urban area as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I couldn't actually see any form or any shape besides the shadow itself and the impression. You know when a wheel is turning very fast, you cannot see the details of it. So that was my impression. It was so fast that I couldn't differentiate between the shape of the thing itself and the shadow cast on the ground.
Yeah,
the only thing I could compare to was the size of the cars next to it.
And how big was it compared to the cars?
It reached again like to the height of the windows mm-hmm. of the cars.
Mm, that's pretty.
It was big thing. Again, not a dog. I would say you could normally see walking on your place, you know, on the road or a cat or no, it was a lot bigger than that. So, but that again happened many years before I had these other experiences, which made more sense.
Mm.
The shock was still the same.
Yeah. Do you think there was a recognition when you then saw the one on the mountain? Was there a sense that it was similar or did it feel quite different?
No, it felt different.
Mm.
It felt different. I couldn't even think or relate to that, to the previous experience.
No.
Afterwards, because I was amazed by the fact that my friend was there and he could actually see it because the previous time, it was me alone,
mm-hmm.
and there was no more witnesses.
Yeah,
of what just happened? So I felt like okay, it's not important then. Must have been something in my mind. I don't know. I might be tired or something. But the second time in the mountain, it was two people witnessing the same thing, and there was no, you know. Reason to think that it just happened in your mind and it's not important, that's nothing.
Yeah.
Which is what I thought the previous time. So I tried, the first time I tried to calm down and just, you know, forget about it and just try not to make sense of it in any positive way, you know?
Sounds like you had some kind of reaction if your partner was concerned about you while you were mm-hmm. viewing it. Was it because were you frightened?
Yeah. And it took me a while to calm down and just explain what just happened.
Mm.
So, but the fact that I was alone again made me just stop thinking about it and just forget about it and.
I was just thinking that the contrast between the two places in which you experience something, one is in an urban setting with streetlights and cars, and then the other is, you know, in the bosom of nature on a wild mountain and, you know, it's two complete extremes, isn't it? But then the similarity of the of what may have been a black dog the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no noise from that.
No. The first time it was just the sound of it. Like I couldn't hear anything, or it was not like the thing was staring at me. It just crossed the road and or moved from one side of the road to the other, just tracing these huge circles.
At
high speed, but there was nothing more than that.
It's like if you think of the metaphor chasing its tail, so there's this beast that's chasing its tail. Would that have made sense to you at all in your life at the time? this idea?
Again, I can't remember actually.
It's around, but certainly it does seem like the one on the mountain is very much about that place.
Yeah, I think so. It felt like it was like a guardian of the mountain there. And it was like a blessing. It was fiercely protective and aggressive. Mm. Yes, it was very, very aggressive. But as I said before several times, I didn't feel a threat.
Yeah.
I didn't feel it like a threat.
It's a really amazing experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I still have goosebumps when I think about that rolling sound.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And terrifying and amazing at the same time.
Yeah, totally. The real a sense of awe. Yeah, thanks so much for sharing.
You're very
that
welcome.
With me. It's really nice to talk to you.
Time to
So great to have a black dog encounter to start us off in this series. I found this story really intriguing. As I mentioned, these sorts of experiences are very well documented, and Mark Norman's book, Black Dog Folklore, is a great one to check out if you're interested in reading further. Like fairies and other unidentified beings we've heard about so far, these manifestations seem to come from an other world that we're sometimes able to glimpse. In some traditions, black dogs are seen as bad omens. But as we touched upon, these beings just are. They're not good or evil. It's our own response to them that changes according to our beliefs, experiences, and knowledge at any given time. Our guest, though open to extraordinary experiences, was very sceptical of anything that he had not himself witnessed or felt. Yet in the moment he was unable to breathe, and it was an overwhelming event. In the aftermath, however, he was able to see it as a blessing from a place he loves and knows well. On a human level, it was a terrifying experience, but his depth of spiritual practice allowed him to experience it as a vision, an ethereal being from another world, without reacting to the innate fight-or-flight fear that we all have within us as a human response. This is really interesting to me. It suggests a deep inner strength and knowingness and a sense of trust in the situation, which I really admire. I can only imagine how he felt afterwards, watching it run off with such force that it shook the trees and bushes all the way back up the mountain. The dedication of the mountain to the Virgin and the angels is also very interesting. Was the connection with angels a result of historic encounters with otherworldly beings in that place? There's also a reference in Mark Norman's book about an account of a black dog around the ruined priory of Frithelstock in Devon, England. We're told that in medieval times, the monks had built an unlicensed chapel on a remote hilltop, containing a statue which was worshipped there, monks and locals alike. This didn't sit well with the bishop, who believed the statue, which could have been an ancient one, was not of the Virgin Mary at all, but in his words, a disobedient Eve or an unchaste Diana, as in the goddess of hunting to whom fierce dogs may be associated. A historian later suggested that the monk's hilltop shrine could have originally been dedicated in earlier times to a local Diana-type goddess. It's a fabulous image, insubordinate monks creating their own shrine in a sacred spot and inadvertently engaging locals in the worship of a pagan huntress goddess. But could the mountain in our guest's encounter have also originally been dedicated to Diana, previous to the Blessed Virgin? We simply don't know, but the idea certainly intrigues me. Or was the dog protecting something other than simply the mountain? Rumours of treasure surround the wise man who famously chose these mountain caves to dwell within. Black dogs are sometimes associated with guarding these locations. They're certainly connected with old pathways, and one thought I had afterwards is that it took place on a mountain. Could it have been along a fault line? I'm beginning to learn more at the moment about how geophysical conditions are often the scene of paranormal phenomena. The first sighting also took place on a road. So trackways and repeated circular motions are what connects these two experiences from the viewpoint of our guest. There's also the point that this was a liminal space between the mountain and the road that leads to the town. Lastly, but perhaps most importantly, those glowing eyes are one of the key identifying features of these encounters. And it's since been confirmed by our guest that the dog was also large and shaggy, which combined to provide the most reported descriptions of these supernatural beasts or manifestations of nature. A big thank you to our guest for this marvellous share. It gave me a lot to think about and conjures up some powerful images that we're so familiar with in film and literature. If you've enjoyed the episode, please like, rate and subscribe, and do consider sharing with a friend. And you know I love to hear from you, so please get in touch. It feels good to be back and to be journeying with you again. Much love, and always remain curious.